There will be parties again soon, and family gatherings. There'll be parades and sporting events and concerts. To help our communities when they come back together, respond to the 2020 census now. Spend a few minutes online today to impact the next 10 years of healthcare, infrastructure, and education. Respond online today to make America's tomorrow brighter. Shape your future. Start here at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
Get the latest sports in 1 hour. It's Crunch Time, weekdays from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. And now,
check this out.
It's Crunch Time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green-lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. And I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score.
And we welcome you to today. I actually felt like it was a Thursday today. Maybe that's because last night I had to put out my debris bin and our garbage bin. Is that like on the path to normalcy, at least the recycling and the garbage is still being picked up on the same day? People, I'm grasping. We've got what I think is a fine sports radio program just for you on this Thursday. If you'd like to be involved, we've got a method, 284-8561, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. You could also hit us up on the text line, 3210824. Oh, wow. I've got ESPN on, sound down. That would be silly. Von Miller of the Broncos tested positive for the coronavirus. So, yeah, I mean, you'd have to be naive to think that as testing expands, which it has to do according to the doctors and the pandemic experts, you're going to learn more positives before this stinking curve could start to flatten out and we could even think about getting back to our lives. But yeah, I'm not even going to think about that now because like Costanza says, hope is killing me. Aaron Fentress, The Athletic, 3:30, Lightning Round, 3:45. I love first-time guests. Her name is Miren Fader. She's written for ESPN, Bleacher Report. She does a podcast. She wrote a really in-depth, just gorgeous piece on Sabrina Ionescu. She's based out of L.A. She'll join us at 4:30. At 5:30, part two of Sabrina. Well, yeah, we're all Sabrina all the time. Well, as of now, she's still a duck. We are 25 hours and 8 minutes away from her being a member of the New York Liberty. And we'll hear what she had to say during a teleconference with reporters earlier this week. Did you guys see the special on the Pac-12 network last night? So you guys did an awesome job. A++++. So many of you reminded me. Oh, by the way, you should let people know about the special on the Pac-12 network. It's a 7 o'clock, and it's about unfinished business, Ruthie and Sabrina. And I'm like, oh, cool. By the way, finish the show at 6, go into Steve mode, and I just happen to have Twitter open on my phone. Rob Mosley basically said, retweeted the Pac-12 promo for it and said putting his phone on DND. So I missed the first like 3 minutes. Picked it up. Fantastic. I mean, this is the ultimate compliment for people who do sports videos and documentaries and specials and all that. It was 30 for 30 quality. It was top flight. Ashley Adamson and the people who just hit a bunch of homers at the Pac-12 network. And then, so the part I missed came at the tail end because they replayed it at 8 o'clock. And, man, there's a lot to take in because when you have this kind of four-year run, and I know they didn't get to play the tournament, but, you know, they played the regular season, which was brilliant. They beat Team USA, the UConn trip, handing the Husky program its worst loss in the history of that building, going down to Stanford, beating on them, just crushing everything in their path on the way to a regular season title and a Pac-12 championship in the tournament. And then, of course, the rug gets pulled out. And I'll tell you, it's rare. It's not never, but when a player, a team, coach, a program just takes root like they did, and, you know, old dog, new tricks, that's me. I'm now officially closer to my 60th birthday than my 59th. And over the years, I talked about women's basketball. To me, it was never a women's sports thing, because people would be like, especially during the lean years, you know, we didn't talk a lot. We had Coach Westhead on, and obviously I've had a relationship with Bev Smith, who's one of my favorite people in the history of the world. And she'd been on the show going back to when I first got here, and she was still coach. And people would say, why don't you talk a lot about the women's basketball program? And the truth be told is, on a show like this, nobody was. And it wasn't about a women's sport. I also don't talk about NASCAR or a lot of other sports, regardless of gender. You know, you've heard me. We've had conversations about Olympics and the LPGA, and you've heard me talk about Serena and my love for Martina and Chrissy a million times over the years. But this is up there. I'm going to look back years from now and think of favorite teams, just where when they were playing, whenever that was, that time period was blocked out. You know, fortunately, we were able to go to almost every home game. And, you know, that comes with being double fortunate enough to get to do this. But I some of the stuff that I thought was the most awesome was just hearing from Ruthie and Sabrina's parents, just who they were. And I thought there was really one part that really fascinated me, because they tried to – they had them both sat down, and they were talking about fire and ice. Now, if you are a college basketball fan and you hearken back to – I believe it was the late 80s, very early 90s. I'm pretty sure the two guys who were nicknamed Fire and Ice at North Carolina State. I know if our buddy Big B is listening, he's all over this, because he's a Wolfpack guy. When Jimmy Valvano was still the coach, and they had Rodney Monroe and Chris Corciani, and they were Fire and Ice, I think they made a run to a Sweet 16 their last year. They also had Tom Gugliotta. Remember Googs? It was a good team. But the response from Sabrina and Hebert was, well, who's fire and who's ice? And they're like, aren't they? Sabrina just flat out asked the interviewer, aren't they opposites? And she's like, we're a lot alike. And she said, we're more peanut butter and jelly. So the PBJ combo, as opposed to fire and ice. I love that. That was just – the thing I love is we've seen it up close and personal. But a lot of what was said, and you learn something. We're also going to talk with Miron Fader, who wrote this incredible piece in Bleacher Report. So – I always like to learn something new about a favorite topic. I guess that's the best way to put it. And we're going to – and that's special. And our conversation today is going to do just that. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's head to FLA and bring in our pal Steve. What's up, Steven?
Well, some great news, Steve Cannon. You're gonna be blown out on this. Guess who wrote to me? Team USA from the Paralympics, and they said, if I do whatever I'm supposed to do for them, the CAA doctor who is a specialist for my vision, if I fall in the criteria of having a vision loss, then I might be qualified for the Paralympics of being a Team USA athlete for track and field.
Wow, what year would that be?
Well, first I have to see a specialist for my vision, which is on May 4th at 1 o'clock, Florida time zone. If the doctor says I have vision loss and agrees with Team USA from the Paralympics, then I would possibly be accepted possibly this year and maybe do the Paralympics track and field possibly next year.
Steve, that's awesome. Please keep us posted. Let us know how you're doing. And I can speak for a lot of people around here. We're rooting for you, buddy.
I want to say, Steve Cannon, you are the best dude. I love everything about you and Nick. And I want to say also, one of my buddies who's in his 60s, he said, Steven, do you do surveys for the Team USA at the Fan Council, also for the Olympic athletes, but do you also do surveys for the Paralympics? I said, yes, everything.
All right. Good stuff, pal. You be well, and I'm sure we'll talk soon. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So I get a call from my dad earlier. So, I mean, he's in solo quarantine, although he lives in a pretty big apartment complex. So he has distancing friends, and he walks around. That's how he gets his exercise now. You know, I mean, he's born in 1935. So he says he's listening to WFAN, and he's amused like me how some of these topics surface. Now, John Heyman is a writer for MLB.com. I think he's been on various shows on CBS Sports Radio a million times. So what they're doing is they're going through every single solitary major league team and building their all-time 25-man roster. And the debates are absolutely hysterical. And they're deciding who's got the best all-time roster, and it's kind of down to the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Cardinals. So there you go. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Pat. Pat, good afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, Steve. Been a long time.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I heard you talk about how that there was a time when you used to make fun of people who would call in about the women's basketball. That would be me, you used to make fun of when I used to call in about women's basketball.
Were you there for the great debate? It was at the other station where somebody said that when one of the down men's teams, that the women's team could beat them. And basically all I did was when Brooklyn John was the producer, I had a very, for me, very centered, not really overly committed say. And people who said they've never called before or since went, they were going at it via our phone line. It was hysterical. It was unbelievable.
Now, I don't know. I don't remember getting into that. I did tell you a story once about playing City League basketball, and I think I've said this a couple times. And Bev Smith was playing in this league, and they had a team. And it was all former women players. And I played with some guys that I knew through softball and stuff, but a lot of these guys were somewhat younger. I mean, I was pushing my late 40s, and I'm playing basketball with these guys that were in their, you know, late 20s and 30s. And literally, we got beat by that group of girls, okay? They had Sonia Curtis was playing, and Bev played, and Natasha Bryant played. Well, I forget her name now, but she coached the South Eugene. A lot of players. Cindy Ademura was out there. But there were several players that played for the Ducks. And they beat us. They beat us by about 12, 14 points.
Right.
And these guys I'm playing with are just whining because they're getting beat by girls. And that was the last time, that was the last game of City League basketball I ever played. Because
really?
I'm like going, oh, yeah, because I'm out there, I scored like 6 or 8 points. And I was going against Sonya, and I knew Sonya a little bit because her husband played softball with me a little bit. And so I knew him through that. And she's giving me a hard time, so I'm trying to take her to the hole. And, you know, she's got like 3 inches on me, and she's checking two of my shots and making fun of me and stuff. It was fun for me. But playing with these guys, and they're whining. And it's like, you know what the problem is? You guys are just rat ball players at best. Most of you guys never really played basketball. And you're playing against some girls, some ladies, that can play hoops. They play. Most of these gals played on a Division I team, and even though the Oregon wasn't a great team, they can play and they can shoot.
Right.
And it drove them crazy. And I was like, you know, and I told this one kid, I said afterwards, like, you know, I played Bev when she was in her prime, and I was like, you know, I was in my late 20s, and she's playing with the U of O. And we're about the same height because I'm about six. I was like 6'1", a little over 6'1", and she's like 6'1". And, you know, I struggled with her. And I played a lot of hoops. I wasn't a great player, but I could play a little bit.
Right.
And she'd get up and down the court with me, and she'd bang me on rebounds. And I have all the respect in the world for Bev Smith, especially as a player. And I followed her career. Yeah, I followed her career. From that point on, I started watching, you know, follow women's basketball. So, you know, I've always been kind of a fan of the team. And so anyway, so to see where the Ducks are at this point now, you know, when Sabrina came into town, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, was quite, you know, was great. And I knew what kind of player she was. I, you know, had looked up a lot of stuff and knew that she could be really a difference maker for this team. But the thing about Sabrina is that my kid was working out over at NCU, and this was the summer after Sabrina was a freshman year. And so I was friends with the coach at NCU, Heath Alexander, who's now he's an assistant coach at Cincinnati now. Heath told me that they were going to have this group of kids from Oregon coming in. And so I was like, cool. So I went over there, and so they did. And so Audie Gilden and what's her name, the girl from Notre Dame, I'm going blank, Erin Bowley.
Erin Bowley.
She just came into town, so she came with them. And I forget there was another girl that's only played one season. She came in there, and Sabrina. And so they come in there and they're playing, and they actually let my daughter was working out with a guy named Corey Gant, who works out most of these girls. He's like one of the top developers of players in the town. And Corey, he is good, and these girls all know it. And so he was working those girls out, and so he let them have the open gym. And so we're in there, and so I'm standing there, and so Sabrina comes out. And I've been talking to Audie Gilden, and Sabrina comes over and she says something to Heath Alexander, who was the former head coach there at NCU, and says something to Heath. She looks at me and she reaches over and she says, "Sabrina Nescu." And I just go, "Sabrina, I'm a fan. I know. I love your show." I mean, she was just really nice. She just started talking, you know, just a good kid. And that was what the cool thing about that group was, is like Audie Gilden, great kid, just sat there and talked and stuff. I just, you know, Erin Bowley was a little bit more standoffish, but she didn't really know everybody. So, I mean, it didn't surprise me, but I've heard good things about her. You know, it's a cool thing. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. It's too bad what happened with this team now, but, you know, we'll see what happens. Hey, one thing I just want to interject. My hope is that with Pac-12 Network being down right now, they'll go out and start finding some other announcers, and hopefully they get rid of Ann Schatz. As much as I love to watch women's basketball, I literally...
This is what you're thinking about,
my wife
about,
was, Pat. I can't stand that woman. She drives me flipping crazy. I'm trying to watch a game, and she's doing little adjectives, and she's wrong on 90% of the things she says. And, you know, when they get her and Mary Murphy doing a game together, I, you know, I don't have much hair left, but I'm ready to freaking just pull the rest of it out. It's like, shut the fleep up, both of you.
Wow, you're pretty harsh there, dude.
Well, maybe, but I know somebody that works as a color person with them, and she's not, I know that she's not well loved by some of the other people that they deal with.
All right, Pat. You're so, negative Nelly. You started out so well.
I know it was great, and then I had to bring a downer. But
yeah,
sorry.
I know. Come in for a landing, Pat.
Okay, I will do that. Thanks, Steve.
All right,
take care.
Take it easy. The debate between men playing against women on the other station. I had somebody call up and claim to be in the medical profession, and they were I'm telling you, I almost fell out of my chair. They were explaining the physical differences between men and women about joints, hips, proximity, the way the knees develop, and something about shoulder joints and jumping higher and running faster. And it was just a deep dive, and it took up almost the entire show. And literally, I don't think anything got settled, except it's kind of that deal where the level of frustration, some people were calling and were just dismissive and talking about and first of all, now we're going back about 16, 17 years, I want to say, and the evolution of the women's game over that time has been remarkable. But there's the difference between, to me, always between, you know, the modern men's game and the modern day women's game is, one is obviously played above the rim. You know, when you get down to fundamentals and dribbling and passing and pick and roll, high screen and roll and foul shooting and all that, you know. And I've said this before, the women play basketball that we could all relate to, the NBA and the high level of college. It's like, yeah, I don't know. I don't hang out with a lot of people who could take off from a step inside the foul line and dunk or take an alley-oop or stride all the way down or, you know, do a double reverse lefty tomahawk dunk. That it's kind of like comparing we regular hackers to PGA players. It's like technically it's the same sport, but it's the game is totally different. That makes sense. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take our first break of this Wednesday, and we'll be back. We'll have a Coors Light update, and we'll chat up Aaron Fentress coming at you next. 95.3 The Score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
Holland will go deep, and here is Anthony Lotti, an average of 40 yards per punt to punt it away. And he dropped it. Ball on the ground, Oregon. Brady Breeze has got it. Brady Breeze is going to score again. That's the second time this year that Brady Breeze.
And did you see him one-hand scoop that?
Picked up a fumble, a muff punt, and scored.
Yeah, I've noticed that we've been pulling a football highlight for just about every day. I'm not the only one who's like, oh, that just sounds good. That's just a beautiful thing, right? Yeah, Brady Breeze had a couple scoops and scores this year. Imagine how he finished the season, what kind of player he's going to be next year. I mean, with Holland and the corners coming back and the depth and Wright and I mentioned it yesterday, but I really do believe that if you harken back to, you know, this time a year ago as we were gearing up for the 2019 season, whether it's Phil Steele or Athlon or all the various websites that preview college football and all the hooting and hollering about the Oregon offensive line being elite, I think the secondary is going to fall into that category for the next season, hopefully 2020. All right, folks. We've reached another Thursday, and what that means to you is we get our view from the north. Yep, doing his thing in semi-seclusion for The Athletic. On Twitter, use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, always appreciate the time. How are we hanging in there these days?
We're doing all right, man. We're doing all right. I got draft stuff coming out of my ears. so I'm busy. I'm keeping busy.
You know, the draft being a week from today, I mean, this sounds like the most simple statement in the history of sports radio, but how nice is it to have, like, an actual event in its proper place to kind of provide a sense of sports normalcy?
Yeah, thing. It's a thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's probably going to do its greatest ratings ever, right? Like, everyone's people don't even like football. They're like, you know what? I'm going to watch this draft thing, give it a chance. No, I'm looking forward to it. But I'm kind of dreading what's going to happen after the draft. Is there going to be an MLB draft this year? Can we look for that? Look forward to that in June? Is that going to go down?
Well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go over each and every draft pick over the course of 90 days, including what he did in high school, what his friends thought of him playing in the neighborhood. Trust me, you do a show like this, I'm going to capitalize on that. But, yeah, it's
– NBA draft. We got the NBA draft coming up too, right?
Yeah, that's in June, right?
I'm kind of fascinated.
Some of the takes on Herbert as an NFL quarterback, we know the boxes he checks, and, you know, there were some inconsistencies. So what would be the Fentress breakdown of Justin Herbert, NFL prospect, and where he likely will land in this draft?
Well, no secret, I've been fawning all over Justin since the Cal game of freshman year. He has everything you could possibly want in a quarterback. If you were creating him on Madden, someone would say you're cheating. It's like, wait a minute, 6'6 or 6'5, you know, 230 now about, strong arm. And, oh, he's smart enough to be a doctor? Get out of here. Get the heck out of here. I think he definitely has a chance to be great. I firmly believe that, you know, I think history proves this, that it's a crapshoot. It's a coin toss. There's so many things that can go into determining a player's success. You know, first of all, do they go to the right place, the right system, the right coach, the right environment to help them flourish? And then also, you never really know how someone is going to respond to the next level. It's no different than a 4 or 5-star kid coming out of high school. They get into college and they struggle. Everyone goes, what happened to him? Well, same thing in the NFL. First round pick goes in the NFL and they struggle. And everyone says, what happened to him? And we're 5 years removed from Mariota and Winston being 1-2. And right now Winston doesn't have a team, and Mariota's fighting for a job in Oakland as coming in as the number two. Those are both really good college quarterbacks. So, you know, I think, you know, I'd flip a coin with Herbert in terms of whether or not he's going to be great or not, but I definitely believe that he has all the markings of a potentially good quarterback. And I would be shocked if he made it past Miami and Miami and the Chargers, because both are in need of quarterbacks, and that's high. But you never know. One's probably going to take Tua. The other one might just go, we might trade down or something, or maybe we don't necessarily want a quarterback. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I would be kind of surprised if he made it past those two.
Yeah, I've kind of said that. Yeah, he's a lottery pick. How high will be
right.
Let's get to the Seahawks, and we've talked about they need to upgrade their pass rush. No news on Jadeveon Clowney, but they made a move and picked up Benson Maioa, and who actually started his career with a quick cup of coffee in Seattle, had a pretty decent year rushing the passer for the Raiders last year. You wrote about it. What about this pickup?
You know, it's interesting. They're piecing together guys who can get to the quarterback almost in anticipation that they're not going to have Clowney. But they didn't go out and spend a ton of money on a guy, which would preclude them from getting Clowney should Clowney come around. Now, they would probably have to release Justin Britt, the center who's massively overpaid, I believe, based on his production. They would say $8.75 million there. That could go toward Clowney, and then they signed like 4 or 5 offensive linemen in free agency. A couple of them can play center, so I think they can also draft the center. So Clowney's not out of the picture yet, but you know, with a guy like Benson, you know, he had 7 sacks, but all those came in the first half of the season, and he kind of fell out of favor after that. His reps per game went down. He wasn't used as much. So, you know, he was on pace to maybe, if he had the same usage, to get over 10 sacks. But he's a total specialist. He almost exclusively played on second and long or third downs, go in there, get the quarterback, basically, and then come off the field. He's not very good against the run, but, you know, he doesn't have, you know, great burst. He doesn't have a ton of awesome moves. I watched a ton of film on him, my little breakdown. But he has long arms and he has a motor. And he was able to strip sack Flacco, Mahomes, and Rivers last season by use of his motor and long arms. So he's someone who, you know, he can definitely help. And it's funny. It's like, you know, he's a situational guy. He only has 7 sacks. Rasheem Green led the team last year with 4.
Right.
That's your leading sack guy, Rasheem Green, with 4. He only had 28 as a team. The additions of Bruce Irvin and Benson, Maiala, combined for 15.5 last year. So those two alone had more than half of what you had as a team with Clowney. So they're nice pickups from a pass rushing standpoint.
Talking with Aaron Fentress of The Athletic, I was intrigued. I saw you mentioned it on Twitter, some of the reaction to the Panthers giving big bucks to Christian McCaffrey off a year where he just went nuts. I mean, it's him, Marshall Faulk, and Roger Craig, a 1,000-1,000 club. And I'm like, what is it, me, or is it odd that people have such an issue for a guy, especially a running back who's got such a short shelf life, getting their cash?
Yeah, there's a war on running backs in the analytics world. And I'm not saying it's completely without merit. You can make the argument, okay, why am I going to pay a running back 10, 12, 15, 16 million a year when I can probably go get another one, and the quarterback's more important, the receivers are more important in today's football, and the offensive line sort of makes the running back. I mean, you could make that argument. But there are some guys that are just special. Like, they're just – They're not just another running back, like Ezekiel Elliott, like McCaffrey. They're special guys. And so, to me, from a running back standpoint, I'm like, if I'm a great running back and you're not going to pay me, I might as well just retire. Like, why am I going to get my head beat in for, you know, chump change because you think I'm replaceable? Well, fine, replace me then. You know, but smart teams, I think, are saying, no, these guys are marquee. They're elite. We're going to pay them and keep them, plus their box office. You know, you can't discount that. Like, having an exciting running back like McCaffrey or Ezekiel Elliott who are making a ton of money, or Gurley before he got injured, people love to watch those guys play. Like, there's just no denying that. But, yeah, there's a war on those guys. And here's what's funny about it. I got this little mini debate the other day with some people at work because I want to write something about it. I actually wrote about it already last year with when I was at NBC Sports Northwest, is that in reality, the position that's overpaid and not leading to winning is quarterback. Like, I think I talked to you about this last year, even.
Yeah.
The whole question about whether or not to give Russell Wilson $35 million a year. It's like, if you go back to L.A. in 98, only 2 quarterbacks have signed mega deals and won Super Bowls post the mega deal. That was Eli Manning and then Peyton Manning. But Peyton Manning was with Denver, and he actually wasn't a catalyst to winning. I mean, he was kind of bad that year. But yeah, they did win it with a guy with a big contract. But other guys like Flacco, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, even like you go back to Kurt Warner, they were unable to win again. Ben Roethlisberger, they were unable to win the Super Bowl again after getting that huge payday, which, you know, puts you in the 14, 15, 16% of the cap realm. The only guy who's probably accepted that is Brady, but Brady famously took less every time. Like, he never took the max number he could get or became the top highest paid player. He always left some money for the team to go out and get other guys around him, which really helped him win 3 Super Bowls to close his career in New England. So, you know, it's funny because the analytics people are all about passing and quarterbacks and passing and quarterbacks, but it's really these quarterbacks are eating up so much of the cap that they're hurting their team's chances of winning a Super Bowl again. Russell Wilson made $500K when they won the Super Bowl. He hasn't come close to winning. You know, well, the next year he made about the same. They almost won it, but he hasn't come close since. Now, you could argue, well, that's just because Seattle hasn't drafted well, but think about it. If you have a good quarterback, a great quarterback like the ones I named, and they get you to a Super Bowl, right, what are you doing? You're drafting late in the draft. So I'm drafting late in the draft, and I'm losing a bunch of cap space to one guy. It is really, really difficult to maintain a championship level that way, even if you have a marquee quarterback, because a quarterback has never won a Super Bowl by himself. You have to have talent around that guy.
One last thing about McCaffrey, I happen to be looking it over. That people forget he started out as a baby. He's only 23 now, and he's played 3 years. So for a running back, at the end of his contract, he'll be 28, still in his prime. Just a little observation. I was watching. What?
I just said, pay the man. Yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah. So I know this is right up your alley. I was watching some Hearns Hagler last night, and I know you're a big Sugar Ray guy, part of that ridiculous boxing team in 76. So I just – when you look at – back then, it's like if we wanted a fight, we got it. I mean, that was one thing with Sugar Ray. If I felt like a couple times a year we were getting a marquee fight, Duran, everything. I mean, that guy was just electrifying.
Yeah, that's my dude, man. My Mount Rushmore of athletes, Walter Payton, Sugar Ray, Magic, and then Jordan.
that's not bad.
Love me some Sugar Ray. Love me some Sugar Ray, man. I have a ton of his fights on DVD, but you can get them all on YouTube now. I've actually been trying to – I tried this once. I got distracted, but I wanted to sit down and, like, watch every one of them from start to finish, from fight one through the end of his career. You know, not in one day, obviously, but just to relive his career. I got to like the fight 10, this was like 7 years ago, and then life happened, and then I got derailed. But, no, I love Sugar Ray. And those, you know, I can't get into boxing the same way anymore since the days when it just made more sense. Like, it just, you knew who the champion was. If there were multiple belts back then, but it made a little bit more sense, and guys were seeking to unify the belts more often. I just wish boxing had more structure to make it more interesting for me to get back into it. And also, there aren't that many compelling figures like there were back then. It just seemed like there were more characters back then that people gravitated toward. And also, we're more distracted by more today than there was back then as well. I do also believe that not the best potential fighters are fighting today as much as they did back then. I think there's more to do. Because if you thought about it, back then, the richest athletes were boxers, right?
Yep. Millions.
Yeah, I mean, you fought a marquee fight, you made a ton of money. You made them in the millions, whereas NFL players, MLB players weren't in the 80s weren't necessarily making a million a year, if I recall. Like, I think Walter Payton might have been one of the first million-dollar NFL players. I mentioned, remember, it was a huge deal. Ricky Henderson got $3 million a year. Remember that in like 1990 or something? So boxing was more attractive to the elite athletes to maybe make a lot of money, and that's changed dramatically, so I don't feel like we're really watching the best of what could be the best. I don't know. It's just not the same for me. It's kind of just disappointing because I love those days, and I love me some Sugar Ray.
I'll tell you what, folks, if you're during this downtime, 1981, Hearns Leonard, it was the fight of the year. It's one of the greatest fights I've ever seen. I mean, you can't get it.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite fight of all time. It's just the back and forth. Not only the back and forth, but they changed styles mid-fight. Like, Hearns was stalking Leonard, and then when Leonard got behind, he started stalking Hearns. It was crazy. It was like the total shift. And Leonard, who was always a finesse fighter, became the stalker to try and get the knockout because he was losing. Right? And he finally pulled it off. But, yeah, seriously, if you love boxing, anyone out there listening to this, or maybe you're just mediocre on boxing, you just say, boxing's okay. Just go on YouTube, Sugar Ray Leonard Hearns, 1981. Make sure it's 1981, their first fight, and just sit back and just watch it, and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's a fabulous fight. Two guys literally at the complete peak of their profession. Very rarely does that happen. We have two guys right around the same age in their absolute prime, at the top of their game. No shenanigans. Neither one of them was distracted by a Robin Givens or Don King, right? It was like they were just peak themselves. It wasn't like one was 32 and one was up and coming. They were just right there in their sweet spot. And it's just a beautiful fight.
No, it's one of the best ever. And back then they fought 15 rounds. It went 14, but then it was scheduled.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy to even think about? 15?
Yeah.
When did they start going away from that? When they start going like early 80s, right? Like 80, 45?
The aftermath of Boom Boom Mancini killing that guy, they started the discussion. It took a couple years, and then they decided for safety it would go to 12, and that was the end of 15 rounds.
I watched that fight live.
All right, one last question. Sunday night, the 10-part documentary. Are you going to lock yourself in a room? Has everybody been put on notice? If you bother me, there's going to be payback. The Jordan documentary on the last season.
I'm kicking everyone out of the house, COVID or not. No, I'm kidding. I can't wait for that. So that might be a thing. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make the kids watch it with me. Because my kids know about Jordan. And actually, my son and I are teaming up on NBA 2K with the 95-96 Bulls. We put them in today's league. So we're playing with the Bulls. So he's learning a little bit about them that way. But I might have them watch it because I think it's historical enough, and I think it's going to be fascinating enough that it's going to be something that crosses over and transcends. You don't have to be a huge basketball fan. You don't have to be a huge Michael Jordan fan to watch this. But I think there's going to be a lot of theater behind it. And let's face it, when Jordan was playing, non-basketball fans watched the 90s Bulls. I'll never forget one of my best friends' wife. She was not a big sport. She's still not a big sports person. But she would come down and watch the Bulls in the playoffs and finals with us because she was just compelled about it because all she would hear in everyday life was about the Bulls and Jordan. So she kind of wanted to see it. Could he three-peat again? All that kind of stuff. She got into it. Probably never watched a basketball game again after that about 10 years ago. But that's how compelling they were. And I think that's how compelling this show is going to be.
Yeah, and especially now, it's going to go off the charts. All right, folks, yeah, he's Aaron Fentress on Twitter, Aaron J. Fentress for The Athletic. Fun stuff as always. You and your family, be well, be safe, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, you too, man.
Take it easy. All right, break time. We'll be back, and we'll sneak in a lightning round to wrap up crunch time next. 95.3 The Score.
What's happening? What's happening?
We're riding the waves of technology just for you. You can call the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline at 284-8571. Text 321-0824. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953.
For him to say this, I think, is very encouraging for sports fans. There's a good, even ethical argument for why it's okay for sports leagues to pursue tests so long as it's not an issue of life and death for others, so long as they become more widely available, maybe even out of proportion to the rest of society, for lack of a better term, because I think there is great value in the diversion of sports during a national crisis.
And we welcome you back. That was Max Kellerman. Completely forgot myself for a second there, talking about proper steps to get things back. I know we're running a little bit tardy. Let's get right to it. It's Thursday. It's crunch time. It's the last segment, and we'll hit you with a lightning.
You'll have to excuse my friend. He's a little slow.
Luckily, I have prepared for such an event. The lightning round.
It's another Thursday lightning round. I want to watch Hitman Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard. I can't hear the music, so this make no sense. A lightning round.
Oh, you nailed the ending again. The words the words in the rhyming scheme wasn't there, but your timing is great. You know exactly how long the song is without even knowing how long the song is.
It's like I wash my hands to it instead of Happy Birthday.
Actually, the whole clip is 21 seconds. So yeah, everybody,
nice.
wash your hands to the lightning round, and you'll be fine. It is the lightning round. I bring up topics and things. I ask Steve questions, and then he ends up being wrong most of the time, and we laugh about it later. It will begin with something that doesn't sound like it should be a debate, but it's kind of turning into one. Which shoe brand will Sabrina Ionescu sign with? As a doc, you would think it would be a no-brainer. It's Nike. She wore Nikes her entire college career. Nike decided to sell her jerseys with her number on them. Nike was there her whole way through college. Sabrina is Oregon. Oregon is Nike. Sabrina is Nike. That should be it and settled. I mean, the Nike brand, pretty strong. Might have heard of it. They would love to be able to say that they're starting a women's shoe line, growing the women's game with the biggest name in college basketball, the jersey sponsor of the WNBA, the perfect amount of brand synergy that marketing directors love, a match made in heaven. But then there's Under Armour, who are staying in the race thanks to Steph Curry, who is an Under Armour athlete and a very good friend of Sabrina's, so much so he's been texting her daily, urging her to sign with Under Armour. Now, Steph isn't new to this either, and not only knows Sabrina personally, but he's got some pull within Under Armour. As you go back to 2018, he got them to create a women's line of his SC30 shoes after a young girl in the Bay Area wrote Steph a letter wondering why his shoes were only available in men's or boys' sizes. That's a solid real-life baseline Sabrina can look at to believe that Under Armour can make her the first women's professional player with her own signature shoe. And Puma's just kind of there. She brought them up. I don't really think it's going to happen, but it's an option, technically. So Sabrina will sign with Under Armour, Nike, or Puma.
It's got to be Nike. I mean, I know it doesn't have to be, but it does. So I'm saying Nike. I'm swooshing here.
Fair enough. Next one. It's getting into the madness of mock draft season, and it's beyond just the first round. There are people out there that have done, multiple people, 7-round, 255 picks worth of a mock draft, and I, a crazy person, read one of them. The one I read was by Dan Brugler of The Athletic, and he has 5 Ducks being taken in this draft. Justin Herbert, duh. Troy Dye, Shane Lemieux, Calvin Throckmorton, and Juwan Johnson. That would be one more than the Ducks had in last year's draft, and would tie them for second among Oregon players taken in a single draft, along with 2015 and 13, while 2009 is your leader with 6. And I can envision all 5 of those guys I mentioned being drafted, but you can also remember Aaron Fentress wrote an article where he talked with a scout anonymously, and they said that they didn't think any of the Oregon offensive linemen were any good, and maybe that's just one person's very wrong opinion. I don't know. In the end, it could just be a smokescreen, it could be nothing, it could be something, who knows. In the end, over under 3.5 Ducks taken in the draft.
This year?
This year.
Yeah, we know 2 locks, and I would be knock me over with a feather if at least both linemen didn't go, even if it's later. And Johnson, with that size and what you might call catch radius, somebody's going to find him appealing. So if it was 4.5, I'd be hedging. 3.5, I like it. I'm going over.
All right. Last one for me with about a minute to go. Field Yates of ESPN tweeted that LSU has the chance to make even more history, setting the record for the most players taken from one school in a draft. The Ohio State University has that record from 2004 with 14 players. Started with Will Smith. No, not that one or that one. He was taken at 18th to Aiden Clark with pick number 227 and a punter taken in the 3rd round, which is incredible. In that same mock draft on The Athletic that had all the Ducks in it, there are 14 projected Tigers landing in the draft, 13 of them in the top 150 picks. Turns out a team that kind of walked to a championship is full of uber-talented players. Who'd have guessed it? What percent chance do you give LSU setting the NFL draft record with players taken?
Wow. And what is the number again?
The record is 14. So jeez, to break it, they got to get to 15.
I give them a 1-in-5 shot. I mean, they had a lot of good players, but 15? That's like half a round to themselves. Oh, man, that's a good one. All right, well done. A nice lightning round to send us into the 4 o'clock hour, and we've got fun things up our sleeves. Sports Talk is next, 95.3 The Score.
I got a lot of problems with you people.